What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi!
Whoa!
This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Anna.
And I'm Shireen, and this is a guest episode. That means we have a guest. Wow, how self-explanatory. It's Zahra Ali. She's here with us in studio. It's a great conversation about family, being raised conservatively and trying to break free.
Yes.
And we talk about how she ended up in comedy, and it's a very cathartic conversation.
Yeah, we cry a lot.
Yeah, we do.
Maybe.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we're off to the races.
Hi, Shereen.
Hi, Anna. Today is another bonus episode, aka a guest episode of Ethnically Ambiguous.
We should say aka a boner.
Next time.
Lady boners?
Aka
sorry.
Lady boner.
She's here. No,
sorry.
No, no, don't
I
apologize.
Love to talk? I don't know. I don't,
oh my God.
Surrounded you're by always, Muslim
you're
women.
Supposed
I don't know.
To, you're supposed to sit in silence the entire episode. No, I'm kidding. Today we have Zahra Ali.
Hello. Thank you, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God. Thanks for
coming.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
So excited to be here. I'm sorry I missed you all when we did the crossover with our facial recognition comedy podcast.
Yeah. And where were you? What's your excuse?
Woman, I don't know. Honestly, I was probably on the road. I was probably traveling. I think that's probably what it was. Yeah.
I mean, even if you were there, though, it would have been so cramped. Like, I think four would have been the max to have at that table.
Yeah, we record in a closet in Koreatown.
Yeah. So.
But it would have been a lot to say.
Yeah.
A lot of opinions.
Yeah.
Just to intro you a little bit, you're the third member of Facial Recognition Comedy.
Technically, I'm the second, if we're talking about history.
Well, I didn't mean that. Sorry.
No,
I meant the third that we've had on, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we had Paula V. Ganalan on. Did I say that right?
Yes.
And
you
then,
did.
And then
good
we
job.
Had Fizza Dasani.
Uh-huh.
And now we have Zahra Ali.
Oh my God.
And
yes. So, I'm your third guest from Facial Recognition Comedy.
So now
comedy.
We've completed the pyramid of.
And you're a stand up.
I'm a stand up.
And you're a writer, I'm assuming?
Stand up, writer, actor.
Hell yeah.
The whole shebang.
Cool ass person.
Yeah.
You know, all those things.
Let's just start from the top. Where are you from?
I'm from Jersey. That's what I tell
Hell
people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you from Jersey?
No.
No?
Okay. I just love it.
I get so excited when I find Jersey people out here. Yeah, I grew up out there. I was born in Queens, New York. And then before I started school, my parents moved out to the suburbs in Jersey. And I'm pretty much from there. We moved around a little bit. But yeah, Jersey's home. And yeah, I lived in New York for a long time. I went to college out there. And then I moved out here to LA about 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, in November it's going to be 5 years.
Wow, congrats.
Thanks, I made it.
What did you study in college?
I studied business. Oh. I went in for engineering, a good brown girl.
Yes, yes.
And I just could not do thermodynamics for the life of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? I could get a job at Goldman Sachs without being an engineer. And I did.
Whoa.
So I just switched majors to business and I didn't really look back. It was way easier than engineering and made
some
more money.
Did you enjoy it at all?
Yeah. No, I did not. I don't enjoy working. I don't enjoy working.
Yeah.
I don't know how we all fell into this independent women, working girl bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm in the Ali Wong school of thought where it's like, why did we tell them that we're capable of doing all this stuff? Because now they're fully taking advantage of us.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I hate working.
It's so, I work so freaking hard and I don't get paid as much as the mediocre white guy sitting next to me.
It's infuriating.
It's
I love that, the Ali Wong school of thought, because everything she says, she says it in a very hilarious way, but deep down her every thought is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I talk about this with the facial rec girls a lot, and I think Fizza brought this up. It's there's something to be said about, brown excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Brown excellence is amazing, and then white man mediocrity is still worth way more than brown excellence.
God.
You know,
it's infuriating.
It's and it's not. Okay, fine. I'm just I'm stereotype. I'm generalizing,
But are you though,
I'm generalizing because you see it a lot, Of course, there's exceptions to everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really feeling it right now.
Well, we in our office we always talk about our favorite thing to do is make fun of guys who fail upwards.
Yeah.
Where you're oh, well, that guy's a fucking idiot. Yeah, he's the head of this company, or he's the head of this production company. I've heard horrible stories about that guy.
Yeah.
And now we're being asked if we want to work with him? No.
I mean, the biggest fail upward story is our fucking president.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been bankrupt and has failed businesses. Now he runs
a
country.
Had a fake university? Are you shitting me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
white men can do anything they put their hearts kind of to.
It's kind of to.
It is crazy. Well, okay, so you studied business.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you graduated and you stayed in New York and you worked.
Yeah, I worked. Coming out of college, I had a job in a field called management consulting, which is kind of how do I put this? Have you girls ever seen the movie Up in the Air with George Clooney and Anna Kendrick? It was her breakout role. It's kind of like that.
It's mostly in airport terminals.
Yeah, I used to travel around the country to go to different companies to tell them what they're doing wrong, and tell them how to fix it. Not exactly firing people, but sometimes, management was okay, we'll just fire people. So it's not.
And you'd come in as the bad guy.
We're always kind of given this, we're the scapegoat, so we're painted as the bad guy, but we're really not. We're there to help figure out what the problem is.
Yeah. So how long did you do that for?
I still do that.
That's really?
I'm still doing it. I'm losing my mind now. I feel I'm hitting an inflection point where I really need to make a decision.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still doing that. I don't travel as much anymore with the day job.
Yeah.
I somehow figured, I finagled my way into a company, into a market. So I moved from New York to LA. And all of a sudden, I went from working 60, 70 hours a week to 50, 45, where it's 6:30. And they're like, why are you here? Go home. Have a life. So I was able to really give more time to my creativity and stand-up life out here in LA.
So was that when you were doing management consulting, were you working, is that what the job was with Goldman Sachs?
No. Goldman Sachs was just this internship that I got in college. Oh. And they did give me an offer, but I didn't want to sell my soul. But I also didn't want to move back home. So I picked a job that kept me out of the house while still kind of living at the house.
Yeah.
So I was maybe once or twice a month I would sleep at my parents' house. Or, go home and do laundry or whatever.
Yeah.
But instead of traveling back home every week, I would just go to Miami and party it up at Winter Music Festival or travel elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I really got to explore and spread my wings and stuff with that job early on.
Nice.
Yeah.
When did you realize you were interested in comedy?
You know, I don't know when it happened. It just, at some point, it ended up on my bucket list. I want to say sometime during, I want to say early 20s. Like, I've always been a fan of comedy. And my mom and my parents are a fan of comedy. My mom more so. And I got into Joan Rivers because my mom would crack up watching Joan Rivers. And she never really knew if I understood what was going on. And half the time, my mom didn't know I was in the room because I have two younger siblings who she was just busy taking care of.
Yeah.
So I would watch stand-up comedy with her. Kathy Griffin. Ellen. So I think I grew up watching those comedians. And then as I got older, you know, I started watching Comic View and like Chris Rock and that whole school of comics. So I think I've always been a fan of it.
Yeah.
And I've always loved sitcoms. Comedy and rom-coms are like my favorite movie genre. And I always was the go-to MC or host or on the debate team or I think public speaking was just something that was just, hey, you're good at talking and you know vocabulary. Yeah. You should just talk in front of people. Let's give you a mic. So I just became the MC for school events all throughout like elementary, middle, high school, even college. At one point I was hosting a charity gig or something because I was very like involved in extracurriculars and stuff. Even like in adulthood, I was just like end up being on a board of some charity, you know? So I think to like hone my hosting skills and just have another avenue, I always had stand up on my bucket list. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I was going through like my 9th breakup or something, I was like, you know what? Let me just go to an open mic. And I did. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened.
Wow. So how long has it been since you started?
It's been 6 years, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was like dabbling in New York. Oh, another thing that happened. So throughout this breakup, I started writing stories and I was going to start a blog called Kissing Frogs. And I was just too chicken shit to do it.
Yeah.
And then a friend was like, just do an open mic. You talk like on a mic randomly all the time anyway. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Let me just do that.
Yeah.
Because at least that way it'll just be in front of people in a small space instead of like published somewhere on the internet where people can like go send it to my parents and all that stuff. So that's what happened.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you, as someone that was so comfortable speaking in front of an audience, was it at all nerve-wracking to change into comedy and be reliant on like getting laughs?
It absolutely is, because getting laughs from a group of people who are judging you on whether you can make them laugh or not, that is really hard. That's what the main difference between hosting is, like, not everyone's expecting you to make them laugh. Like, they're just expecting you to, like,
Be articulate
and move things along. So that's hosting. Stand-up comedy is, like, punchlines. And you're there to actually entertain people and engage people and get people interested in your story. So it's still the hardest thing. But it's also, like, the most rewarding thing when people laugh and they're with you and you can see that they're following you and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
The best compliment someone can give is you're funny, in my opinion.
Yeah, that is the best compliment. But sometimes I don't think a lot of people realize that, because often like I'll get off the stage and women will be the first to approach me, which I think is awesome. And they'll be like, oh my God, I love your outfit. I'm like, oh, fuck. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Every fuck you want.
Yeah. I'm like, man, but what about did you like my jokes?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, you're funny. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
That's the reason I loved comedy, was because like I love making people laugh. Like that's like the most rewarding experience, is to like say something and people are like happy. You make them happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, making people laugh is probably my favorite thing to do. And I never realized that I've been doing this with my friends my whole life. And then once I started, like, really getting into it, some of my friends were like, you know what? This fits you. Like, I don't know. You're always that friend during the day saying inappropriate shit all day long when we're at work, just making me crack up. And I'm like, so I just didn't put two and two together.
Yeah. Well, so so you come to LA, you continue, you basically get a job working with another company. It's another company, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they transferred me out here and stuff. So, Yeah, I mean, I pretty much just came out here to get the fuck out of New York because I was done with New York. I like grew up out there. I couldn't handle the dating scene there. I feel like that city was just rejecting me, and my body was starting to reject New York too. Yeah. Like I just couldn't do it. We were on our third polar vortex in a row. Like I was just, I had the flu twice that year. Like I'm like, you know what? I'm over it. I'm over it. No more heartbreak, no more, you know, like, I'm done. At least in LA, it's probably not going to be great, but at least there'll be palm trees.
Yeah.
And at least the guys will be cuter, which they are, but they're a whole nother kind
another
of
breed of pure person.
Yeah.
So totally. how did your parents feel about you moving across the country?
They didn't like it. They, of course, I mean, they didn't understand why I wanted to be like thousands of miles away from them. I'm also the oldest, so they were so confused. Mm. Like, why don't you just get married?
Right.
Why? What does in LA just get married? Just get married. No, I'm like, Mom, I don't know if your cultures are like this, but my parents, they had marriage on their brain ever since I was in college, and they had to turn suitors away and stuff. And then as soon as I graduated college, like, it was kind of, you guys saw Big Sick with Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah. It was like that. I would go home on the weekends and there would be some like random interviews. Dude there. Some random dude at our house over for biryani. I bet you a bunch of guys in the tri-state area just came over for free biryani, like at my mom's house. Like it was, you know, forget me. They probably weren't interested in me anyway, but it was crazy.
Let's talk about your background a little bit then. Are your parents immigrants?
Yeah. My parents are both immigrants. They're Pakistani American. They both moved here like in the early 80s with their families. And
so they weren't married. They met here.
They met here. They met in Queens. They were like set up through like the small community of Shia Muslim Pakistanis in Queens, New York. And it turns out they did have family, friends, and mutual friends in common. So
they both, when they came over, went to New York, Queens area?
Yeah.
Wow, that's like a true immigrant story.
Yeah, it really
and then
is.
Moved to Jersey.
And then moved to Jersey. Yeah, that's how the migration happens. It's usually, it's interesting. A lot of people have this story. I run into so many people I know, like Muslim Americans, people that came over from their parents came over from the motherland, met in Queens, or they like moved over, lived in Queens,
right,
and then spread to another suburb in the country.
Yeah. Nice. So I guess the setting up worked for them. So they're like, it's going to work for my kids too. That's probably what they're thinking.
Yeah. I think, but I don't know if your parents are like this, but my parents, they moved over here in the early 80s with that. Whatever Pakistan was like for them in the 80s, like that's what's in the time capsule in their mind, you know? Yeah. So they're holding on to a culture and religion of whatever was happening in Pakistan in the early 80s. And Pakistan has evolved to 2019. The rest of the world has evolved to 2019, but they're still in, you know, 1982 or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the religion we grew up with in my household.
What do your parents do?
My dad's an accountant. And my mom's a preschool teacher, or pre-K, she teaches pre-K.
That's
adorable. Okay.
It's adorable until you give your grown daughter a timeout. Like, that's not adorable.
But so were you raised Muslim, you and your siblings?
Yeah.
I mean, I was raised Muslim. My entire family's Muslim. I have a lot of feelings about religion now. How was it like for you, especially once you it sounds like you were allowed to date at least, no?
No.
You had nine breakups?
No. Girl, I lived a double life. Okay?
Yeah, what do you mean?
What are you talking
about?
They
don't know any of that.
Hell no.
Because I still live a double life, I feel like. But like, I feel like.
Not anymore, thanks to the podcast.
Do they listen to the podcast? Do you have cousins listening to the podcast?
Sometimes. I interviewed my cousins.
My cousins are like, I say they're my biggest fans because they listen to everything and they watch everything and they like all my things. And then they go and report back to their moms who report back to my parents.
Well, that's the thing. Like my dad's side of the family are much more strict and religious, but like backwards in my opinion. And they'll see a photo of me wearing shorts on my Instagram and tell my dad how awful he is as a father. My mom's side of the family is a little bit more liberal, where like I'm able to talk to them. They were on the podcast and like, so they're a little bit more accepting. But either way, there's still a very much double life aspect to my identity. Like I don't really talk about sex. I don't really talk about dating at all. It's really hard because I'm like almost 30 and I feel like I can't really be myself ever.
Girl, I feel you. I've lived that life for a long time. I had to keep track of all the lies I've told, like the web of lies I told to keep. Like, I was a con artist by the time I was 15.
Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah. I lied so much. And then after I graduated college, I purposely got a job where I could just keep the lies going because it's like, all right, well, they're going to want me to move home. How can I move home and still live the life I want? Oh, just get a job where you're traveling every week and you never have to come home. Wow. And so that's what I did. And it was great. But it catches up to you. Like, at some point, you just want to be your authentic self. And also it's exhausting having to lie all the time.
It's really exhausting. Yeah. But and even though I've tried to be honest with aspects of myself to my parents, it's still I can't really do it all. Like there's some things that they will never really get.
For sure. There are some, you know, there's just some battles not worth fighting. Like I'm that way with my parents. Like my mom visited and I had to scrub my apartment. Like there's a bag of secrets at one of my other friend's place. There's my wine fridge is at a coworker's place. Like it's just the stuff you have to do because there's other things you know are going to upset them. So you'd rather save those things for like World War III happening.
Yeah.
So are they still very strict about like drinking and all that?
Oh yeah. They're very, very, very strict.
They don't even want to like, do you think they have any sense of what you do?
I think it's a don't ask, don't tell type of thing.
I see.
Yeah. It's very, like my mom, you know, when she was here last week and I was like, all right, well, mom, like go, I have a one bedroom, like go sleep in my room. Like I'll just sleep on the couch for the week. And she's like, no, I'm not sleeping in your room. I'm like, what? Okay. All right. Like she was so weird about it. I'm like, okay, Omi, whatever makes you comfortable. Like I'm not going to push anything.
She's like, I know what you're up to, but I won't say anything.
Yeah. It's just so weird.
I don't want to sleep in your filthy bed.
Like, as if you wouldn't wash the sheets.
I mean, I clean the sheets and everything, you know, but like for her, I think my mom is a little bit more chill than my dad, you know, similar to you, Shireen, but like there's just some fights where I'm like, I'll save this for when I really need, you know, to have this fight.
Yeah, you really got to pick your battles.
You really
do. For sure.
But it's exhausting because, I don't know, it takes a toll on you. It's very emotionally taxing and mentally draining.
And then I try to mask it with just comedy, you know?
But then are you able to be honest in your comedy? Or like, or do you kind of have, like, do you censor yourself?
Well, my parents have never seen my comedy, and I don't censor myself. I think my first couple of years I was trying to still be that person that's like trying to find a compromise between like, oh, I don't want to piss off my parents if they find out what I'm talking about. But that really, it like stunts your creativity and your growth like as a creative person. So I had to let all that go.
Yeah.
I had to let it go. And I mean, they did not appreciate me doing comedy. And we were estranged for a couple of years too. Like that was really, it was really difficult. It was a difficult time. But at the same time, like it was kind of like a burden lifted off my shoulders. Because it's like, all right, well, now I don't have to try so hard to find like a compromise between what I want and what you guys want. Like I'm a human being, like I'm an adult. I feel like I can make my own decisions and hopefully I don't fuck it up. So let me see what I do with my values and my decision making from here on out. And it's been pretty cool. That's how like I got deeper into facial recognition comedy. Then we started touring the country. And like my stand-up life outside of facial rec kind of, I was so free to talk about anything I wanted.
Yeah.
And I just got more opportunities that way.
I love it.
Should we take a quick break and come back and keep talking about this?
Yeah, we'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
And we're back.
Just to touch on what you said before the break, you decide to do comedy. Your parents kind of like shut down. They weren't like interested and no, like they were just like, you can't do this. And if you choose to do it, we're not going to talk to you.
There's like a bunch of other things that happen. Like they were making all these like family decisions that would affect all of our futures for the long term. And it's like, well, you don't have a vote because you're out there being a whore.
Oh,
like my dad would equate like being a stand up and because like, you know, we do a lot of bar shows and stuff. Yeah. It's not like the classiest places, but I mean, it's part of being a stand up comic. You're not always going to do a theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be. I think my dad's big thing is like, why are you working at a place that serves alcohol?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, this is not okay. And I'm like, well, why is this, like, why are you so stuck on this rule? You know, they're very much like rule followers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think outside the rules,
mm-hmm.
which has always frustrated me because it's like there is a whole life outside these rules. There's a whole bunch of people that can add value to your life. That can enrich your life that live outside of these rules. Maybe try to form other relationships outside of this community or whatever. Anyway, so we basically got into this huge fight. It's like, I can't believe you guys are making all these decisions. I'm an adult. I'm in this family. And they're like, no, you're not.
Mm.
And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm not. So then we just kind of parted ways. And my mom tried here and there, but they didn't really try hard enough.
Yeah.
Or they didn't really try. It's like there's certain parents, you know, and I've noticed this with some of my other parents who are very supportive of their kids doing comedy or whatever. It's like they can.
But is it brown parents?
It's not.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
Brown parents are just like.
This conversation you have with your parents is very similar to many conversations I've had with mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much, you know. And it's the brown parent. I just feel like. They're not going to let you get away with anything that they don't believe in, you know? So they're like, all right, well, if you're going to go do this, fine. And I'm like, okay.
And they're very harsh and very blunt and very, like, heartbreakingly mean where you're like, why would you say that?
It was really, there's a lot of, I can't even tell you how many times my dad just calls me a whore. It's just, oh, you're a whore now? I'm like, you know, dad, like, I would walk down, like, just into the kitchen, like, wearing skinny jeans or something. He's like, oh, did you change your name to Christina? You're not Zahra Ali anymore. Wow. You're just Christina. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
That's so typical.
Like, what does that mean,
Dad?
Like,
cool joke, but fuck you.
I don't understand. What is wrong with Christina? Yeah. I'm sure she's a lovely lady. Yeah. Like, what's wrong? You know,
it's so frustrating. She's white. She has no morals.
Yeah.
It's frustrating that, like, the vast majority of immigrant parents immigrated here away from a country and they still can't acclimate entirely.
It is crazy. You know what it is? Because my parents, they pick this community that they're so insular, you know, mm. and they're all able to function. They all have like decent jobs. They make a living, you know, and it's just yeah. it keeps feeding this community and you just remain in this bubble. And I mean, you see that everywhere. Like there's so many communities like that here in LA, you know, like the Armenians have their community, yeah. the Persians have their community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could choose to live in that community your whole life for generations, mm-hmm. you know? So,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's not even just brown people. Like, you can see, like, the Mormons, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they stick together. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's just, but it's so limiting. And, like,
it is.
Yeah, it's frustrating because I feel like, yeah, what Anna said, like, your conversations with your parents are so similar to every conversation. Like, I've had so many shouting arguments with my dad and my mom and like crying and like not being able to articulate myself and my emotions. And they're just like, they don't understand how I'm the, like, why I'm this way.
You know what? I had to start controlling that as an adult. Cause I realized in my relationships, my romantic relationships, I was having full on conversations yelling. Cause yeah. that's how I learned how to communicate mm-hmm. my feelings. And I'm yeah. like, oh my God, no wonder he thought I was crazy. Cause I am.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
That is such a good point.
Yeah.
Because before I moved here, even moving here was like a huge like betrayal to my dad.
Did you grow up in the UC Davis area?
I grew up in San Diego mostly.
Okay.
Mostly in All San right. Diego. But they just didn't understand why I was leaving. Like, they were just like, just get a job and live here until you're married. And my sister's a doctor, so I was already screwed.
Did your sister do that? Did she stay in San Diego, became a doctor in San Diego?
But she was someone, she always wanted to be a doctor. So she was always like.
So she was the golden child.
She was the gold. She okay. still is. She's engaged to a doctor. It's all dandy.
Okay, we get it. Doctors. Yeah. Fine.
But,
yeah.
And
everyone's
and,
a doctor.
Yeah, everyone's a doctor. And even though my parents are extremely supportive now, it really feels like too little too late sometimes. Like, I love them and I love their support, but I wonder what I would have been like when I look at other parents and their children are just, like, flourishing because they're just always have been supported and artistic and, I don't know, I guess you can't compare yourself, but, yeah. I mean,
it's very real, though.
Speaking of doctor, my dad, he joined this app for me. It's called ShiaMatch.com.
Oh, my God.
No, I can't believe that
It's a real
exists.
Thing. It's a real
my
thing.
My mom is wanting me to join a Minder.
I'm on Minder. I have a whole joke about Minder.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
Wait, what's Minder?
Minder Muslim
is
Tinder.
It's a Muslim Tinder. It's a dating app for Muslims.
My mom's friend's daughter met her fiance on Minder, and now my mom is like convinced that's like I need to go online.
Girl, there's a lot of hoes on Minder. I mean, like male hoes on Minder.
I don't doubt that.
They're trying to hook up. They're just trying to take your hijab off. You know,
yeah.
that's what it is. Yeah. Though all these like that's why I never wanted to be with like a Middle Eastern or a brown guy or like yeah. any sort of man because it's like I'm not. I know how the men are raised.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it. They're told they're number one. They're the yeah. dude. They can do whatever they want. They don't have the same rules as the women. So I don't, and I'm not even trying to be like clearly racist, but I never wanted to be with a Middle Eastern man because I knew that they had this sort of entitlement to them.
There is.
Yeah.
It's not even Middle Eastern men. Like, all men,
well, yeah, all men are
raised with some
yeah.
sort of entitlement,
yeah.
but Middle Eastern, South Asian men,
yeah.
oh my God, it's through the roof
yeah.
because they're treated like
they're the gods.
They're yeah. the gods. Yeah,
me and my sisters always talk yeah. about that. We've never been interested in dating someone that even looks like us or sounds like us or anything because like. We know that, like, they're going to come home and expect a fucking four-course
yeah.
meal.
That was, oh,
like,
yeah.
their laundry folded on their bed.
My fear was that I would end up with my father. A man who'd be like, well, why would you do that? You shouldn't do that. Why would you go there? You shouldn't go there. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing... It's like, I
yeah.
will snap your neck. You don't understand the levels of, like... I have no patience for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what am I going to do? Stab an Iranian man? And then what? I go to jail for the rest of my
yeah.
life? It's
but
like,
then,
I can't
okay,
deal.
The reverse side of it. Okay, the brown men, okay, they now have given us women who grew up here,
mm-hmm.
their peers,
yeah.
this stigma that like, oh no, she's crazy. Oh, she's wild.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
she drinks. Oh,
yeah.
she parties. I'm like,
she's a whore.
What?
Yeah.
I saw you taking tequila shots at the club. You it, like what?
Yeah, it's okay, it's because standard. They're a man.
It's a double standard.
Oh, she'll fix him. She'll let's just find him a girl who will fix him. Yeah. It's always like some good girl. Okay, so going back to the doctor part earlier, my dad sends me screenshots from this website, Shiamatch.com.
Shiamatch.com. So redundant because it's like, first of all, if you're a Shia, you shouldn't be on a dating app.
Exactly.
It's like, or even just like being Muslim.
It's a matrimonial site, okay? It's matrimonial.
Straight to the wedding.
If you're okay, so this guy's spouse requirement, okay?
Oh, no.
Spouse, he's a doctor.
Wait, is spouse requirement something that he wrote or like something on the website that
it's on the website. Oh, my God. Okay, profession, doctor, MD, very educated, from USA, very handsome, moderately religious, belongs to educated family. Spouse requirement, educated, can be doctor or non-doctor, moderately religious.
Can be what's non-doctor?
Very generous.
How generous can be doctor or non-doctor? So
can
it's
just
like,
be a human being.
No, it's like even that, you know, like the way that our cultures look at people, it's like, okay, I'm looking for a woman who's going to be this amazing housewife and all of this thing, and she can be a doctor and not or non-doctor. Like that means you need to have a career.
Yeah.
It's ideally doctor. Or something that's
but
you
either
know,
way you're gonna give it up when you have a kid.
Right, yeah, but it's like have a career until you're pregnant and then we can discuss further.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's like what okay, what are you bringing to the table?
Yeah.
You're just gonna be a doctor who still wants me to be a doctor and make you eggs in the morning.
Also, the fact that your dad is swiping for you.
My dad.
Like, check it out.
I think he just wants me to like find a nice, wholesome Muslim boy. Mm-hmm. But I think what he doesn't understand is that they don't exist. You know, like that ship has sailed a long time ago.
Yeah. You wouldn't even find them in your home country because, Instagram exists. Like, social media exists. Everyone's fucking like... What is it? Like, we're all, like...
Dude, they are twerking in Karachi, okay?
Yeah.
Like, it's a thing, all right? Yeah. Everybody's listening to City Girls, not just me.
Yeah.
It's a thing, okay?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
My my dad always had this thing, because he has three daughters, and...
Does he remind you girls
regret,
of that all the time?
I think he would maintain that, like, if his daughters didn't end up with good Muslim men, he would feel like a failure coming to this country. Because, like, in his mind, that's security. Like, in his mind, like, he needs to... That's, like, a representation of him being a good father. And even though my sister's engaged to a doctor, he is white and he converted, like, for my sister. So it's, like, there's a lot of pressure there.
How did she do that? In this day and age, to get a guy to convert to Islam...
Honestly,
but it's so on paper though. It's not like he's gonna.
I mean, that's fine too.
Yeah.
But like, you know,
but that's an exception. Like, I feel
it
like
it is an exception. That's very rare.
It's very rare, and it's also very rare because my sister's fiance is a genuinely amazing human being, and he just said like, she was worth like I would do anything to be with your sister. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
they
sweet.
Have an they're great together. But
that's how you
I'm
know
not
it's
going
good.
To use that as an example. Like, I can never, I can't do that. But I think it's also because, like, being bombarded with the idea that, like, you're Muslim, you have to be a good Muslim, it made me completely reject that label for a long time. And I feel like I'm trying to reclaim it only culturally, because I think culturally I do love being, like, raised Muslim and, like, good values and stuff.
Yeah, I like Eid is fun.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of God being a thing sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, how does that make you... I want to ask you how you feel about the label of being Muslim, because I feel like we might be a little similar as far as, like, kind of having a lot of resentment about... I don't know, not resentment, more so, like, conflict. About it.
I remain conflicted about it as an identity. Like, yes, my name is Zahra Ali. You can't, I can't argue that I'm not a Muslim, right? Because I was raised that way. My parents are Muslim. I have a very Muslim name. But what I follow and not follow, do I, like, pray five times a day? Do I fast? Do I do those things? No. And really, if you subscribe to that and if you follow it, like, I'm not judging anyone in any certain way or what, because I grew up in a community of people that are very nice people who really believe in this religion, so I'm not going to put it down, you know? But for me personally, I don't know. It's hard for me to function in a society of 2019 with just the way I want to live my life under all these guidelines. I hate to say this, but it's like, for me, following all the rules of this religion that I've been brought up to believe, like, it's not conducive for me living...
Yeah.
A happy lifestyle, you know?
Yeah,
like, it's just
way.
Very, it's just a lot. It's a lot of work. And it's a lot of work. It just doesn't fit. Yeah. It just doesn't fit into my life.
I feel very similar. Like, my mom is very devout Muslim, and it's very interesting to me that she's not really someone who you would know is Muslim because she's so private about it. She keeps it very close to heart.
I like that. I like your mom already. Well,
it worked out because my dad's secular, so he doesn't really give a fuck about anything. He's just kind of like in his own world, in his own angsty Persian dad world.
He's an angry Persian dad?
Where he's just, you know, being judgmental about random things. But but my mom, like, she lives in such a, like, I always see her, I'm like, God, she's so self-actualized. Like, nothing really bothers her. She lives in such a peaceful state. She prays five times a day. She does her Quran study. She's always like, remember, God has a plan. And you're like, wow, what a world you live in. And it's like so, like, I look at her and I think, God, I wish I could be at peace like you. But then there's so many forces that work against it in my life and my mental state that it's like, it's just not realistic.
But that's,
like,
that's
I'm
the thing.
Not that person. I don't know how to even be that person.
But that's what religion should be. Like seeing your mom be devout and, like, be Muslim, but also, like, not push it on you. It doesn't make you resent the religion at any point in your life. You know what I mean? Like, I think being forced to go to, like, Arabic school or like, I don't know. Like,
I went fasted to Sunday school.
I fasted until I was like 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just all these little things. Like, I remember, I still remember to this day when I got my period, I hid it from my mom. And then when she found it in the trash can, and I started sobbing uncontrollably, being like, I don't want to have to start praying. Because I knew that was like the rule. Like, you get your period, you have to pray five times a day. And I was mortified because I just didn't want that responsibility. Like, I wasn't ready.
Did your siblings do it?
I got my period. I was the first one to get my period out of my
siblings.
Really?
Even your older sister?
Yeah. We're like a year and a half apart. Oh. And I developed first. It doesn't matter.
I'm just curious if did you like set the tone that it wasn't going to happen?
I was definitely with everything,
the one that
broke the rules.
You were the rebel.
Yeah, and so my older sister was a little bit more obedient and, like, would tell on me when I would, like, take off my pants or, have another layer
and
take
school. Off your pants? What? No, what's happening?
When I learned to drive in high school, I would wear, like, pants over shorts and then I would, like, change.
I had that, too. I had a school outfit and then I had what I wore coming in and out of the house outfit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I remember that immense fear of responsibility.
I feel at home right now. I feel like this is a support group.
That's what happens. Whenever we have guests on that maybe come from different countries or even different upbringings, like, we're all so similar.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. There was a group of there was a Christian, like a devout Christian girl, a Muslim girl, a Hindu girl. Like, we were all friends. And then on the school bus together, we'd be like trading outfits and stuff. Like, oh, this will be cute on you. And this will be, cause it's like, we couldn't leave the house wearing what we wanted to wear.
Yeah.
So we'd bring like random things for all of us. And it's cool because that kind of hiding shit from your parents, it transcends beyond just like being a Muslim girl.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has a version of this.
Yeah.
It's unifying for sure. But it's just this struggle to like find yourself. Ultimately, that's what it is. It's like, I want to wear this because I want to express this part of my personality or whatever.
It's like,
and
I
want to
wear this
you.
So I can fit in with everyone else.
Yeah.
And I can't do it.
I just desperately just wanted to like not be made fun of. I just kind of wanted to be cool or at least not bothered and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that was just never an option.
No.
I just feel like because I looked different, you know, like it took me a while to grow into my eyes, but they're still kind of big, you know?
Oh my God.
It just, I was so awkward looking.
Yeah.
The kids would make fun of me. And so that's when I started roasting. I just started roasting people.
I love that
was my defense mechanism. And to this day, I do that on stage. And so I think that's when people stopped bothering me. But it was always like, I never want to be made fun of like this again. Like, I don't want anyone to approach me and make fun of the way I look. So that was like a big thing.
I mean, that's a huge part of like being on social media or just like having a public presence on Twitter. And I think a lot of it is I'm so, like, I don't let anyone follow me on Instagram. Like, I'm very private. I don't like fans following me because I think it still rings true to like being a child and feeling so judged.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be judged. I've spent my whole life being different. I don't want to hear your thoughts. And then when people tweet at me, they're like, well, why are you muting me? It's like, because I honestly can't do it. I'm at this point in my life where I spent my whole life being told I'm different by my own father being told like everything I'm doing is wrong. That it's like, I don't need to hear it from some white guy in Minnesota. You know, it's like, you you can all fuck off. I don't need it in my life. I'm trying to live a completely oblivious life to all judgment because I've spent too much time worrying about it. It's like, I've always thought I was different. Like, I don't need to think about it any further.
Yeah. I was like that for a long time. And now I appreciate the haters because that's just bringing more attention.
Yeah.
You know, like they say no press is bad press. And it's kind of true. Like, honestly, like if people want to hate on me, that's fine. Because like
it's more telling of them than it is to you.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's a you problem. If you have a problem with me, like I'm good. I did nothing to you. So that's a personal problem. But hey, if you're leaving comments and stuff, that's only heightening my engagement. So hey, thank you very much.
And on that note, one more commercial break. We'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
And we're back.
It's too real.
It's too real. What you said about your eyes resonated with me so hard. I got made fun of a lot. I was like kind of like low-key. I mean, like, no, I was bullied. But I hated my eyes growing up, and I had really thick glasses. And so I remember, and I still get made fun of my, because they're all kind of, they're pretty big and like kind of bulgy or whatever. And I still get really self-conscious.
They're beautiful. We have beautiful eyes.
I appreciate them now, but I remember being so self-conscious about what I looked, and even like being hairy or having big eyes, and like I refused for a long time even wearing contacts because I liked hiding behind my glasses.
Did you guys live that unibrow life?
Oh my god, I shaved off my eyebrows in sixth grade.
You shaved them off completely?
No, I shaved the middle. I took a razor right in the center, and it was uneven obviously because I was dumb 11-10 year old, and I went right up the center. I went to sleep, and the next morning my mom woke me up for school horrified. She was like, "What have you done?"
And did I
was
like,
"I'm tired of being hairy. No, I just have to fucking live through it, man."
Yeah, I remember the day my mom was like, "All right, you can pluck out your unibrow." I was like, "Oh, happy day!" Like, oh, it was like, finally.
I just did it one day. Like, my mom would just not let me do anything, and then one day I got bullied so bad. I got, I think one guy just called me Bert.
Oh,
yeah, like from Sesame Street, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to be puppet.
It's so this annoying now because I overplucked my eyebrows so hard in response to being hairy that like they kind of haven't never grown back since. And now having thick eyebrows is the biggest fucking trend. And I'm just like,
we started that shit, okay?
But I can't have them back. Like, I wish I could just roll back the clock.
Yeah, they just don't grow in. I feel
I fill them in every day.
I was gonna say,
I got microblading.
You should try castor oil.
I have a giant tub of it.
It doesn't work.
I wasn't consistent. I should probably.
Yeah.
I do it every night.
Do it on
daily. I got some thickies. I also do it on my eyelashes to get them all thick.
Does castor oil work on eyelashes? I'm going to start doing that.
I guess maybe.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful because it really burns if you get them in your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like such a very fine line of how much you can put on.
My grandma, my mom's mom, she would live with us. She lived with us for like over a decade. And every Friday I'd come back from elementary school and she would just take castor oil and just massage my scalp for like a good like hour.
That's
that
was good.
And I to this day, I still like remember those days fondly because I'm like, man, if I... Man, I just need someone to massage my scalp every
Friday.
You
have great
hair. Thank you.
It must have worked.
Thank you. Thank you. But it's like the thing that like annoyed you growing up. It's like, man, why was I so annoyed with this? Like, I miss it now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, okay.
Because we're little shits.
And we are little shits.
We're little shits. We didn't embrace our culture back then.
Yeah. Well, because it was kind of like it made us into aliens and we were just didn't want to be ostracized forever.
Yeah. Know? Being a child sucks. And then on top of that, you're also an othered child.
Yeah.
It's like, this is hell.
It's hard being a weird brown kid.
Yeah. Like I couldn't, like my hair being so frizzy and curly, like I didn't know. Like I was constantly like wearing, like I didn't know how to deal with it. And everyone would just make fun of me for having crazy hair. And I just like didn't. And now it's like, I love it. It's wild. It's curly. It's like got volume, you know?
It's beautiful. We're beautiful. We should have just embraced it when we were younger.
But I mean, everyone has their own issues growing up. And I think ours are just very particular because it's kind of unifying how strange we all felt because we just didn't look like our counterparts, you know what I mean?
We didn't look like our counterparts. And also like...
I didn't look like a Spice Girl.
Yeah, really. That. And we didn't have... representation, right? Like now, ethnically ambiguous is like a thing, you know? Like people were so castable right now in Hollywood. Granted, it's for a lot of like, you know, supporting roles and stuff like that. Yeah. And
but
like
still,
and a
like,
lot of commercials for 5 seconds.
It's a good point. Like you didn't see yourself on any kind of media. And that's a big reason why I got into filmmaking because I'm just like, I didn't know it was even possible to be a director or an actor or anything because I didn't see myself on fucking TV. And it's damaging to youth to grow up and think like, what am I capable of doing? I have no idea.
Yeah. For sure. But you know what? This is our time. Like, I think it's happening and I think it's going to continue to happen because we have such amazing stories and it's like we've been waiting for a way to express ourselves. And I think we're finally like reaching those gatekeepers and stuff that are like, oh, your story is so much more interesting than like Becky's story, you know?
Yeah.
So
we've heard Becky's story a billion times.
Yeah, we get it. You know,
you're sad,
fine.
But your boyfriend.
Yeah.
I have a question. So have your parents ever expressed interest now? I guess you're talking to them now, but like your mom just visited. Have they ever expressed interest in seeing your comedy or like what are their thoughts now about you doing comedy?
Well, so a very interesting thing happened. Facial Recognition Comedy, the show I co-produce with Fizza and Pallavi, we got into the New York Comedy Festival around this time last year. And the New York Times put us on a list of top 5 shows we were most excited to see. The fucking New York Times.
That's amazing.
It was one of the best days of my life. And, you know, through the cousins and whatever, it got to my parents.
Oh, wow.
And then my parents reached out to me. They're like, wow, you did it. Like, to them, it's like, because everybody knows what New York Times is, you know? And then I think since then, like, that opened the door for us to start talking again and stuff. And
so it wasn't until last year.
It wasn't until last year, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long was the estrangement?
2 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, two and a half years, yeah.
That's crazy that's even a thing because parents are, they should know better, you know?
I mean, they try their best, I think. I don't know. It's hard.
But sometimes I don't think they try their best. Sometimes I think they expect us to do the work when it's like, it's been hard enough that they should take the step to say something to us. Like they are like literally they're the parent. They're the adult, even though, I mean, we're adults now, but they were the original adult that they should make that effort to be like, okay, things have gotten bad. That's the point that we're not talking because of all these life choices. Like, say something.
But that's the thing. Like, we weren't raised the same way they weren't raised with, like, very good emotional intelligence or emotional communication. They raised us the same way. I think, like, I look at my entire family and it's just like, why can't we talk to each other about actual things? Like, I don't, it's just emotional intelligence is not a priority.
Right. But my dad has been reading a lot of self-help and I can see it in the way he acts. Like I now know he realizes how poorly I was treated. Mm-hmm. Like also probably because I talk about it on the podcast all the time. So he's like, ooh.
Does he listen to the podcast?
Sometimes. When he's on the treadmill, he tells me at the gym.
Aww.
But, you know, I did a whole episode about how our relationship was just so fucked up for a very long time. But I think now he's like reading more and more and just like learning about like mental health and all that, that he like. There was an incident recently where he like threw a bunch of my stuff away. Mm. And this was like a year or two. It was about 2 years ago.
Why? Did he just not want it in the house or was it?
Yeah, he was just like, I didn't want it in your old room. And but then it was so devastating because it was like photos of me and my friend, like all this like art I'd collected. Oh. He just threw away to a point where I can't. And he threw it away the morning before I was coming home. So I could have just come home and take it all down. Like I came home to my parents' house and he threw it all away and I came home. And I had to dig through the trash for all my shit, like to a point where it was the most devastating thing where I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, how far have we come that we have a relationship again that you would do that? And he was just like, what are you talking about? Like, it's my house. I can do whatever I want. And then like 2 days later, he was like, look, I don't know what was really going on. I don't know if he was having like some situation, but he was like, I'm sorry. I was on antibiotics and I don't really have any memory of what I was doing.
Holy shit.
And I'm not really fully sure why I did that and why it happened. And just, you know, that night escalated to a point where he almost pushed me down a flight of stairs. So it was like, oh my God. To a point because I, you know, when you get to that point where you fucking snap and I was screaming and like shrieking in his face, like, I don't know you. Like I was like, so up, like, you're not my father because no person who has children would ever treat their kids like that. Like I was so upset because look, sometimes you get there when you have parents who are so emotionally shut off that you snap and you're screaming in their face. And he was like literally going to push me down the stairs until my mom, which thank God my mom got involved. At that point, she was like, all right, this is escalating. We should get involved. She thank stepped in the mom. Way and was like, back up, back up. And I think I like got all my stuff and like left for the night. Cause I was like, I can't stay here. I hate this guy. And then 2 days later he was like, yeah, I'm really sorry about that. I really honestly, I don't know what was happening. I was on antibiotics. I've been very sick for a few days and, I don't have any memory of it. And I think what I did was very fucked up and I apologize and you never deserve that. And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Like, what are you talking? Like, even I was
you
like,
you got an apology.
Yeah.
And I was like,
what?
That's crazy.
Like, I was like, mm-hmm. Like at the time, I was like, I mean, I don't know, man. Yeah. This could easily be like fake as well. Like, who knows what's
going
on?
You got an apology,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's big.
And
it was huge. And he was just like being so kind, and like it was just
it was an effort to be.
Yeah,
like,
and that was like a very big moment because I was like, oh, maybe he's like learning. And my mom's like, well, he's been reading a lot, so he's like kind of picking up on things and. And then my mom always has to throw him on the bus. Like, I told him not to do that. I was on yours. I was like, don't throw that stuff away. She's coming home tonight. And I was like, yeah, mom, no one's mad at you. Like, relax. Like, your conscience is clear, mom.
Wow. I love that you and I are both surprised. Like, wow, well, he apologized.
I was surprised. I was like, what is going on? Like, I was like, okay, bye. Like, I was too freaked out to fully acknowledge like he was apologizing. In the moment, I was like, yeah, tight.
Okay.
So sick dog. Peace.
Like, apology. Apology is one step. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is changed behavior.
Yeah.
So that I'd like you to report back and let me know if it's working.
About 2 years ago. And he has not touched my shit since.
Okay. That's good.
Let's just say I think he's a little scared. Because I think in that moment when I fully snapped, because I don't think I've snapped like that in probably like 10 years.
Yeah.
Maybe more. I think in that moment, it all occurred to him that my fuse with his shit is very, very short. And as an adult, I know I can walk away. I've got the money. I don't ever have to speak to you again. Like, I don't need you. And I think that really occurred to him. I think I'm doing my own analysis because we never really spoke about it ever again, as you do. Yeah. But I think he started to realize in that moment that it's not like when I was a teen and I had to come home and they paid for everything. It's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have a career. I have a life. I can go get married. I can literally block you out of my life forever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of was like, I know he says he doesn't remember it, but I know he remembers it because I mean, fucking lost my shit. Like, I, you know, like to a point where he was about to push me out of his face and down a flight of stairs. It's like, you remember that kind of shit.
It's an embarrassing thing for him, right? Because he lost control too.
Yeah. And he's the father. He's the parent. Yeah. And so I think for him, it was more just like, how do I save face, but also apologize?
And acknowledge that I was
devastated because it was just so, it was such a weird dark moment, and it came out of nowhere. Like, we were fine up until that point. Like, his testosterone has gone down a lot, so he's very chill. Mm-hmm. He like doesn't bother me about anything, and now that I have like a full-time job and a career and a salary and health insurance, which is so key, he doesn't ask what I'm up to. He doesn't insist I go to law school anymore.
That's good that they've changed their goals for you.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, I think they started to realize that because I would just be like, and then not say it because I'd be like, I'm not going to law school.
I mean, my mom still has hopes for me going to any kind of law school or grad school.
So your parents wanted you to be a lawyer. What did your parents?
I wanted to be a psychiatrist. I convinced myself I wanted to be a psychiatrist for a minute because I was very depressed growing up. And I was like, I want to understand my brain better. And then I realized I couldn't do chemistry, and
that's what sucks is when you realize you actually just couldn't do it because you can't handle it. That's like how I felt about law school. I was like, no.
Yeah, but then my mom was obsessed with Judge Judy, and she was like, you can do that. did they say
this is something I find? They say you're a good talker. You know English. You know it well. You should be a lawyer.
Well, because I was very much, I always argued with them. So for them,
that's what they would say too. They'd be like, you love to argue. It's like, no, I don't love it.
But no, so lawyer was the second thing. And it's kind of tough for me because I always loved photography and comedy and art in high school. But I remember purposely putting that aside, being like, that's not real.
Yeah, because it's not a viable option.
I have to do psychiatry. I have to do this. I have to do that. And my sister fucking aced all her science classes, only a year and a half older than me, 2 years in school. We had the same exact teachers a lot of the times. And I couldn't fucking hack it. I was just not.
That is so hard. It being was very hard, like that.
It was extremely hard, and she was just like the love of every teacher's fucking
was
life.
It,
and
was it damn. Your own personal competition that you had going on with her, or did people actually compare
100% both. It was like my family is very blunt, as a lot of Middle Eastern brown parents are, but it's very obvious they were comparing us. She was also like, she's also lighter skinned than me, and like,
what? And you're really light skinned.
No, but like,
she looked white.
But no, but like,
she looked like you wouldn't know she's Syrian.
So that, like, then by default, she's like the pretty one.
Exactly. No,
I hate that. My sister passes as whatever, you know, like Persian, Lebanese, but she's the light skinned one. So yeah, in my family, it was always like,
but
she's gonna get the better husband.
But as a kid, being raised like you're the tan one, which means like you're not as pretty.
Oh my God.
It really affects you as a kid because you're always compared, and they're so blunt about it. And then especially when she does better in school, and like you walk into a dinner party and they only talk about your sister, and it's just like you feel invisible, and then you feel like an idiot for ever wanting things. And then you go to college being like, why am I here? I have no idea what I'm doing with my life. And it's just, it all piles up. But
I did everything I was supposed to do, and I still ended up being a stand-up comedian. So, like, there's no strategy or formula to be successful and be happy in life, like, honestly. Like, I was the golden child. I did everything I was supposed to do, and it still didn't turn out the way that my parents wanted, you know? So, like,
because ultimately we're us, you know? And I think
there's nothing you can do.
I think creativity is something you can't ignore. I'll just eat you alive. Like, when I'm not making something, I can tell because I'm, like, extremely depressed.
Oh, my God. I feel so good. Do you guys ever feel this way? Like, whenever I don't have enough time to write or whenever, like, I'm ignoring my creativity for, like, a week or two, like, I feel like I'm not functioning. Like, I have the biggest guilt trip.
I'm going through that right now. Yeah. I feel like I've been walking through a fucking daze the last like 3 months because I'm just like at this, I'm just paralyzed. I'm not able to do anything. And I think it's because I have to make something. And it's just like this constant struggle of like not understanding how to be whatever kind of artist you are because you weren't really like given the tools and you have to kind of acquire them yourself as an adult.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
So did your parents appreciate your creativity at all?
No.
I'm talking to Anna. Sorry.
No.
I forget.
No, not at all. I was I mean, like, I remember I would take writing classes in college and be like, yeah, well, I think I might want to do some writing. My dad would be like, but you don't need to do that. Like, you should, you can focus on writing, like, briefs. Or like, it was always like,
writing
something like,
briefs?
That's a great way to go to law school. Yeah, good writing. Yeah, you should. And it's like, I'm writing, like, fiction stories. And they'd be like,
Well, that's the thing. I think, well, since you're the oldest, I'm the middle child. I have a younger sister. My parents raised my younger sister, who's 5 years younger than me, very different than my older sister and I. Like, she was very supported her whole life.
Does she get away with murder?
She didn't even graduate college.
Literally.
The younger ones get away with everything.
The fact that she left college to move to LA and have an internship, it still boggles my mind. I would never have
been
allowed.
Is she doing all? I'm concerned now. I'm concerned
She's
for her.
She's thriving.
She okay? What?
She has a writing job. It's amazing.
What?
She has a mentor. It's just like she has thrived in all the ways I wish I could have.
Can she help me get a mentor? I've been looking for a mentor in this town for 5 years.
I've been looking for one the day I moved here. Oh my and now God. It's too late for me. But like I look at her.
It's never too late for a mentor. Stop. Because otherwise I'll stop believing in myself.
I mean, I only bring that up to say that I think they saw how depressed I had become because I wasn't supported. And then they kind of veered completely back like to the left, and they supported my younger sister and all her creative endeavors. Did you feel like that with your younger siblings, or how was it like for you?
You know what? My number one goal growing up just became getting out of my parents' house. So like the best way I knew how was to do well in school, get into a good school, go away to college and never come
back.
Where'd
you go to school?
I ended up going to an engineering school, like, literally an hour away.
What was it called?
It's called Stevens.
Oh, I don't know.
Stevens Institute of Technology. It's if you're going to stay in Jersey, it's either Princeton or Stevens. And then there's state school, which my parents refused to send me to.
Do they do that thing where you go to, like, a good school or nothing?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, no, it's like you go to a good school or you go... You go where whoever is giving you the most money.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So at the time, like Rutgers or like our state school, they were giving me a lot of money. My dad took me to orientation, and the orientation guide, probably a sophomore in college, was like on the bus. He was like, you know, your freshman year of college, it's where you get to express your freedom and be yourself. You don't have parents to listen to. And my dad was like, none of this shit.
My dad would have done the same thing.
So my dad. And then he was like, all right, you're not, I don't care if they're giving you a free ride. You are not going to this school.
Wow.
He's like, where can we send you? Let's send you to the engineering school where you're going to be surrounded by creepers and engineers and no one you could possibly get into trouble with. So, yeah, I ended up going there. I mean, it all worked out the way it was supposed to, but everything I did was to get out of my parents' house. So, like, I think I was just self-motivated to just do all the things, you know, because at that point I was already brainwashed, like, you're not going to make it doing comedy. Like, I didn't even think comedy was an option until I was, like, probably now-ish, you know, Even now, I still have my grown-up job because it's like I'm still like hedging my bets because I'm that person. Like I'm very careful and precise and stuff when I make my decisions. But with my sister, they like let her be creative.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They did. Yeah. Like to your point, like they knew I was driving myself crazy trying to get into these AP classes and like, you know, and they're like, you know what? Miriam's prettier. Like, maybe she doesn't have to work as hard. Like, it was kind of that, too.
Yeah.
And they let her, like, draw and shit and all that.
That's the thing. I mean, I love that they supported my sister, and I love that she's thriving now, but it kind of hurts sometimes, you know?
I get it. Yeah. I get it, girl. Yeah. Let it out. There's a tissue box right here. That's pretty.
As soon as you leave, I'm going to start sobbing. No, I'm kidding. But you don't feel that way, though? You don't feel, like, a touch of not, like... I don't know.
Well, like resentment in a weird way. Of
if
like,
my
why
sister
didn't, you know.
Was thriving, yes, but no. I don't know. Cause like I was just so like self-motivated.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever I like, I'm still this way. If I want to do something, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's,
like,
that's amazing. I mean, that's commendable. It's shows your personality then. Like you're an achiever and you're going to get what you want.
But it's hard, man.
It is hard.
It's hard. In LA, like trying to make it.
Yeah,
like,
it's very hard.
Like in Hollywood, are you kidding me? Because this is what bothers me about Hollywood. It's like, it's not a meritocracy. It's not. It's not like school or like professional careers where it's like if you're good, if you're talented and you're a hard worker.
It doesn't matter.
And you do all the things you're supposed to do, like you're still not going to get promoted.
It's all nepotism and clicky.
It's a lot of that.
That's what really gets
you
me about
have
this
cool
city.
Cool sneakers.
Yeah, this is.
I'm working on the cool sneakers. I'm trying to get my way into the cool sneakers because I feel like the sneakerheads run.
They do
Hollywood.
They fucking
they really do.
I feel like that's so. I'm trying to get.
I see it a lot in my own office where I'm like, why is he being? Is it he's being treated? It's because he's got the Jordans. Better sneakers.
He's got the Jordans. Ladies, this is the way in, okay?
This is the way in.
That's how you get your boss's attention. Wear some like new cool sneakers and they'll be like, "Wow, you get it." And it's like, "No, this is you being an idiot and thinking just cuz I bought like $140 shoes with cool colors that I know what I'm doing when this whole time I've been busting my ass but you kept promoting the cool sneakerheads instead."
That's the pro tip. It's the life hack on how to get men to respect you.
Yes!
Okay?
Go watch the Bella Hadid video where she's like, he can get it, and then just do it. No, I'm just kidding. Have you seen that video where she tries to pretend she knows what she's talking about with sneakers?
No. I like Bella Hadid. I like all the Hadids. I wish I looked like a Hadid, but I don't. But well, yes, that's become the a supermodel gene.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Become a sneakerhead.
It's not all even that far off, though.
I'm not disagreeing. I agree.
I think it's the millennial 2019 version of like playing golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's like
being hip to sneaker trends.
Yeah, sneakers. I'm telling you, it's the way in because it's like all of a sudden it unlocks something in their head where they just start respecting you more. It's so weird. And I just got into this like 6 months ago and I'm like, wow, I wish someone just told me this secret like 5 years ago.
Yeah. You know, even though that's a thing, I've been aggressively working against it. I've really gotten to this point where it's like
sneakers are fun though.
I know. I have one pair of cool sneakers, but a part of me is like, I'm not going to keep investing because I swear to God, you better notice my goddamn work ethic.
Okay, listen, this is also a life hack. You must know someone who works for Nike. You must find your way to Portland, get yourself to the Nike store at least once.
Do I know anyone that works?
Once every 2 years and stock up.
Okay.
Actually,
now I've told you all the secrets. Now you're going to make it in Hollywood. Just cast me in something.
Okay. Touché.
Fascinating, weird information. The founder of Nike's was one of the people who was like against the like fucking, what are they? The Rajneesh Bhagwan. Supporters in Wild Wild Country. He's one of the people out in like...
that's that cult.
Yeah, in like fucking Oregon. Sorry to say
Beaverton.
Oregon.
Beaverton,
yeah.
Oregon.
He was one of the people, the founder of Nike was one of the dudes who like was like, these people are crazy.
Wow, well, he had a point.
They're running this town to shit, Sheila. I don't know if that's what he sounded like.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for these hot tips. I'm going to go invest in some sneakers.
Happy to help. If any of your listeners have sneaker connections, let me know.
I love sneakers, though. I need to get more informed about them because I have a couple of cool pairs, but
Have to get a pair of Nikes.
Yeah, I have to get a pair of Nikes.
Yeah, just get a pair of Jordans. You'll be fine. Yeah.
Custom make them. I designed a pair, and they're beautiful. I've yet to buy them, though.
Yeah, but they're not available right now, the custom link. Because I tried to buy them recently, and they're not doing them anymore.
Customs?
Yeah.
Really?
I tried, last week.
There's a bunch of artists that do customs.
Oh.
So if you buy your own regular white pair or something, they could probably do something cool for you.
Good to know.
Or you could give your shoes to my co-producer, Fizza, and she does a great job painting her sneakers.
Oh, amazing.
She's good at stuff
I'll keep
like that.
That in mind.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, as Really Zara. Zara is spelled Z-A-H-R-A. And my website, reallyzara.com. If anyone wants to design it, please let me know because it's been under construction for some time. Yeah.
It took all my strength to not say Zahra the whole episode.
You can say Zahra.
It means, okay, for those in Arabic, it means flower. So it's really pretty. It's a very pretty name. But it was lovely to talk to you.
It was great to talk to you, girls. I'm so glad we have a Kleenex box in front
of us. Oh, my God. Yeah. Always. Our noses are always runny.
I'm sorry that we got so real.
That's all it is, really. Just venting.
This has been good, though. I feel good. I feel good.
I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad. Okay. Yeah. You can find us at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B, on Twitter, and ethnicallyambig, A-M-B-I-G, on Instagram. We have a website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. And, buy our merch at tpublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. And you can follow me at Shirohero, S-H-E-E-R-O-H-E-R-O, on Instagram, and Shirohero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter.
And until next time, follow Zara, and also see Facial Recognition Comedy, both in person and... was their podcast.
Yes,
we were both on. Me and Anna were both on it with Fizza and Pallavi. there's a lovely bunch of gals, and we love them. And
we love you guys. Come back. We'll have another one.
I'd love it. I'd love that.
We'll do chai and everything. Fun. We'll have a nice tea party.
Oh my God, I would love that. You're speaking to my truth. Okay, until next time, stay flowery. We change it every time.
Okay, stay flowery.
Because it's random. It's a Hermes flower.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.